While on a routine flight on November 27, 1944, American pilots Donald Meares and Ed Schulader witnessed what they described as a giant red ball of fire that constantly chased them as they attempted to outmaneuver the unknown craft to no avail. Eventually, the ball of fire disappeared, leaving them frazzled and upset as they returned to report the appearance of such a craft once more to their superiors, who had been debriefed multiple times before about this phenomenon. First spotted in 1942 by British pilots on patrol during World War II, the enigmatic balls of fire had been assailing Allied craft for years and were now coming under massive suspicion as to their origins and motivations. But now they had a name, one that spread like wildfire throughout the Allied ranks. What were these mysterious balls of fire, known as Foo Fighters? And why were they harassing Allied fighter pilots? Were they advanced models of classified Nazi aircraft, extraterrestrial interlopers, or something else? Here we have one of the most compelling mysteries of history and what would become part of the UFO mythos and the conspiracies revolving around Foo Fighters, which we will be discussing tonight on Friday Night Frights. I'm your host, Christian Ashley, of Systematic Ecology, here to terrify and instruct you all on the weird, unusual, fascinating, fantastical, and unexplainable things that may or may not lurk out there in the world. I am joined, once again, by my lovely co-host, Joe Day. How's it going, Joe?
First off, I will pay you $50 if you can say that line five times fast without screwing it up once. Second off, I thought we were talking about... Wait, you mean to tell me we're not talking about the band Foo Fighters? No. I had a whole dissertation ready to go on David Grohl.
I mean, sorry to say, but all your research for that was for none.
Ah, at least I learned a couple of things. Guys... I'm jazzed for this one. I think this is going to be a good episode. I'm excited to be back in the chair and be doing this again. I am primed to be talking about ufology with some of the things that I've been watching and taking in over the last week or so. So let's crack into it.
All right. Yeah. So quick business before we go any further. If you're listening to this in podcast form, you're wondering what happened to the last one. Well, it was a comedy of errors on multiple parts. Number one, I forgot to download it. And number two, before when I realized that I hadn't downloaded it, a certain mutual friend of ours who was in charge of the account we use for this had deleted it, thinking that I had already done it, more than likely. So that no longer exists in audio form, but it still exists on the Systematic Ecology YouTube page. So sorry about that. It's just one of those things that kind of happens. As well, sorry if we're pushing this back. We were going to originally do this last week, but I had some deaths in the family, had to take care of things on that end. Didn't really work out that well. But we're here now. We're going to get it done. Our schedule's all over the place. It's never consistent, but eventually we show up. And yep. Part of that, and that is, yeah, go ahead. Counts.
That's yeah, what that's counts. We eventually show up. Yeah. And that's why you all need to make sure that you stay tuned to the Priest to the Geeks Facebook group so that way you know when we're going live. And so that way, when a certain unknown or unnamed producer drops the ball, you will make sure you have still seen it because you caught it live.
There you go. And just once again, one of those things that no one was really thinking about it. It just kind of happened. I forgot because my memory's terrible. He probably thought I'd already done it. Is what it is. So at this point, it's my time to remind you that, number one, you voted for this episode. Speaking of the Priest of the Geeks page, I had put up a poll a couple months back on different topics of ufology. This was the number one pick and was excited to do it. So we're going to be heading into this one. And as a reminder to everyone, our schedule is to, allegedly, once a month, cover one of six categories. Those, of course, being cryptozoology to paranormal, religious strangeness, the weird and the unexplained, true crime, and ufology. Obviously, we're in ufology this time around. So, Joe, what is your history outside of the band with the concept of Foo Fighters, which is where they get their name from?
Yeah. I have exactly three words for you to sum up my history with this topic. History Channel, forwards, History Channel, allergies, y'all, allergies. History Channel, After Dark. For those of you that don't know, back in the day, back in the early 2000s, History Channel was essentially two parts. One from, oh, I don't know, about 5 o'clock in the morning till about 9 o'clock at night. It was basically World War II documentaries. Maybe World War I, maybe you get something like real crazy and they touch on, you know, something having to do with, you know,
the Civil War. War
related, the Civil War, maybe. But then after 9 o'clock, all manner of nonsense started to pop off on that channel. You had the Bible Code, you had Nostradamus, you had Ancient Aliens, you had anything and everything that you could possibly wrap your mind around with all manner of nonsense. And so that was where I was originally introduced to this topic, was watching it through the lens of a whole bunch of people being like, it's all aliens, it's all extraterrestrials, ET phone home, the whole nine yards. And so it'll be interesting for me to engage in a conversation about this that's a little more, I don't know, mild-mannered and not just like, oh, there's grays everywhere.
Well, Joseph, there are. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah.
How about you?
That wasn't my introduction, but yeah, I'm sure that's a fairly common one for many people, because History Channel, like many things in this world, has kind of lost its way. And yes, this is, you could argue this is part of history. I could see your argument, but this is for another channel. But, you know, we just need to watch our Pawn Stars and Ice Road Truckers or whatever is on History Channel, whatever passes for history today, these days, much like the Learning Channel. There's not much learning going on. What's happening over there? So, go ahead.
Hang on a second. Somebody has to be responsible for smartening people up to what's going on that the powers that be will not tell us about. Somebody has to be responsible for reporting on the fact that there is, in fact, more than meets the eye out there. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And that's why they should have the UFO channel or something. Also credible.
I mean, that was basically what the History Channel turned into after 9 o'clock. Ask the Ancient Alien guys. I mean, I could deal with a touch less racism in my ufology than what History Channel had, but like that's a whole other conversation.
Well, Joe, those primitives just couldn't possibly have made those things by themselves. They needed alien help.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't you get it?
Big Rock can't move. They can't move it themselves. Absolutely.
Yeah, obviously. But to actually answer the question, it would have had to have been in one of those like compilation books forever ago. I can't remember the title or anything of like, hey, here's cryptozoology. Here's ghosts. Here's, you know, aliens. And it was probably part of that where I've heard the term Foo Fighters. Like, oh, what's that? And I was maybe elementary age and saying, oh, World War II. I love World War II. My grandfather used to own, unfortunately, they kind of died off because I'm very abusive to the things that I own because I read them multiple times and it kind of lost their binding and stuff. A huge set of World War II, just sets of pictures and underneath that would say, this is taken from the Battle of Anzio or whatever. And I read the heck out of that. So I was at that prime age, like to just keep going. So everything World War II and then aliens, I'll throw that into the mix too. I'm already weird. Let's keep going with this. And yeah, it was a ton of fun. Just like this idea of this World War II pilots, they're on their bombing missions or whatever. They're flying over, you know, Nazi occupied France or Italy or what, or even we'll learn in the Pacific Ocean, attacking Imperial Japan. It's like, and then suddenly there were these things that showed up and they didn't like attack them or anything. They were just like these balls of light. Maybe they looked like they might be a craft of some sort. And then they just kind of left. Which is extremely weird. And I was like, okay, what are these things? It's always been something that's kind of fascinated me. And I also forgot, earlier today, Joe and I recorded an episode, kind of a crossover of sorts with my seminary life with Brandon Knight, where we talked about the Nephilim. So be looking out for that to come out later on. Love Brandon, love working with him. So yeah, that's my kind of starting history with this as a concept.
Yeah, so watching that stuff as a kid, I was always of the impression that, like, all of these people can't be wrong. Like, one-off expert, you know, that's what I mean? Thing. Like that sort of thing. That's different. But when you're talking about different reports, like we're going to talk about from different regions and all of that, and like, let's be real here. We're all sitting here talking about, like, oh, let's go into space and explore space. Y'all, we don't even know we barely have a handle on what's on the same rock we all habitate on. Like, let's tackle what's on our plate first. Let's eat our veggies first before we go screwing around up in outer space and all of that sort of stuff. And I think it's one of those things that is fascinating. And to quote Brandon from the recording earlier, why can we not, if it's all hand waved away, if it's all crafts from other countries or whatever the case may be, like if it's all like logical explanations and all of that, why don't we have even more advanced technology today? All of these years removed, why is there not hide nor hair of the capability to be able to do so? You mean to tell me that everybody straight across the board was able to keep a secret? That's more fantastical to me than saying that they engaged with something that wasn't of either our dimension or our world.
I'll play devil's advocate for a moment. I think there are some people out there who would say that we're at where we're at because of encounters we've had with stuff like this, that we've advanced far beyond what we normally would have done because of interactions with stuff like that. Now, I'm not there with them. And that also kind of depends on how you interpret stuff like Roswell and stuff like that. But I think their argument would be, to be as fair as possible to them, is that it's being slowly introduced to humanity so that over time we become more acclimated to the better stuff and be prepared for it. Now, I don't agree with that because we were just talking before recording of our feelings of humans. I'm not exactly what you would call a humanist by nature. And we're going to have different definitions of the depravity of the soul and all that, because we've argued about that elsewhere. But we can both agree, humans, not the best things on the planet. I don't exactly trust a system that has that in place.
Yeah. No, exactly. And I don't think you need to have... I think more than one thing can be true at the same time. I think you can understand that people are image bearers while also understanding the limitations of humanity. And I think if you have multiple generations, something's coming out. Like, I just don't think... So even if everybody was like, yeah, we're going to keep the secret, you mean to tell me one person didn't come through and was like, hey, let's fast track this and make more money? Come on! Like, that's literally the name of the game for politics, is make as much money as you can. Like, that's it. And so, like, why not be the guy that's like, hey, I want everybody to like me. It's all real. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to be the one that blows the lid off of this off of this thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's mm-hmm. just, like I said, that to me is more fantasyful than trying to say that, like, I would have an easier time believing in these things coming from a different plane of existence or a different area than believing that this whole thing was a cover-up.
Yeah. And there's going to be a lot of speculation done by the U.S. military, especially. I mean, the British government was doing it. We're going to find the Japanese and German governments did it as well. Of like, yeah. What the heck are these things? Everyone was kind of worried about what they were. I mean, there were even some newspaper reports, not many at the time, and later more were revealed in the 50s and 60s of events like this happening. So that the idea that there is a cabal out there that has been keeping this technology away. This is, of course, assuming humans in control or something like that, or even humans knowing aliens are in control of it. It's a lot for me to take in. Like, there's some things I'm willing to take a step of faith on. That ain't one of them.
No. And you know, when you look at the direction of human history, in the years that, in specifically the decades, I should say, that followed like this, because we're only in the opening salvo of the conversation. You look at what comes next and the widespread level of distrust during periods of time like the Cold War, you're going to have, and even like, really, I should say, in a post-World War II landscape. Because World War II changed a lot of the geopolitical climate. And then afterwards, you've got superpowers popping up and you've got conflicts and ghost conflicts and proxy wars and all of these other things that you mean to tell me that there isn't some measure of, oh, screw you. I'm blowing the whistle. That happens throughout that entire time? No, man. Like, I can't get behind that.
This is also something hotly debated in the UFO community itself, and that there have been people who've claimed to be part of that, and they just either weren't believed or they were silenced for their efforts. Can't remember any names off the top of my head, but you could argue maybe that's possible. Things, right?
I think it's fascinating to me that people will sooner believe that it's their great aunt Mildred than they will believe in UFOs or like extra dimensional creatures or different things like that. Like that seems to be where the bridge is too far. Like if somebody's walks around saying like, oh, you know, so-and-so visited me from beyond the grave, they're like welcomed with open arms. But like, I experienced an alien abduction, and people immediately think you're outside of yourself.
Yeah.
And like, I'll be the first one to admit, I'm not running around believing a quarter of what I hear when it comes to ufology and all of that. Like I am really kind of a skeptic to the nth degree when it comes to this stuff. But I just think it's fascinating that the people who step up, they are almost categorically quickly shunned as soon as they pop up. Like I did an interview with a woman, I don't know, a handful of years ago. I'll keep her name out of it because she is prominent in paranormal circles and all of that. She starts like, I'm thinking we're going to have a conversation about the case that she was involved in. And she starts going on about the fifth dimension. She starts going, she's skinnier in the fifth dimension. Like it's all okay. Like it's, but aliens visit her on the reg. Like this is normalized. You know what I mean? It's one of those things that's kind of like, it is kind of like the paranormal in the sense of there's almost an expectation that every single time you go out and you investigate that you're going to get some manner of evidence very, very quickly. And what you don't see
is that oftentimes these half-hour episodes of whatever TV show are literally weeks of content trimmed down and yes. synthesized into this half hour of high octane nonsense and all of that. And these kinds of conversations, I don't think like Foo Fighters, UFOlogy, that sort of thing. I don't think it gets off a go as much as it could, because there's almost this visceral reaction to extraterrestrials and like this whole thing being just like bollocks.
Well, I think you bring up some interesting points. It's not where I thought we were going, but I'm really enjoying this. Is the supernatural versus the more extra normal sci-fi, shall we say, kind of thing, of how one is more acceptable to an extent than the other.
Yeah.
And I got to wonder what's the case for that? Is that because we humans are inherently spiritual more often than not, and we'd be more willing to look at something like that than to believe that we're not alone out there in the cosmos or interdimensional or whatever have you?
I think it's maybe funny that you went that route and my brain immediately jumped to something far more cynical than that. So we live in a post-satanic panic world. Right now, sure, we live in a time where it's not all demons. It's this group is lesser than for XYZ reason. The LGBTQ plus is less than this ethnicity is less than this group of people from this region is less than, rather mm-hmm. than looking for something outside of ourselves. We live in an era where people are classified, and because of that classification, you are deemed something very specific because of that. It is very much a new era of neo-Nazism, neo-fascism, you know what I mean? Like that yeah. sort of thing. Before that, we lived in a satanic panic and post-satanic panic world. That's where you get the term post-modernism. Post-modernism oftentimes revolves around this new modern era of post the idyllic family, the good Christian household, all of that sort of stuff. And then, you know, some people have tried to use the phrase, though it didn't really catch on, of post-postmodern and all of that sort of stuff. But that's why you get like the Warrens, right? Everything's a demon, because think about it. They grew up in an era, again, we've talked about it, and we can talk about it until we're blue in the face. They're two of the most enigmatic people in all of ghost hunting, like that, in all of paranormal. Like they will, you can never really stop going one direction or another when talking about them, because they are so polarizing. But without getting into all of that, they lived during the height of the satanic panic. Dear Alice, the West Memphis Three, all of it. And when they were investigating, it was really like they were also influenced by the church, specifically the Catholic Church. So of course, like a lot of Christians believe that anything, it's all demons. It's every single bit of it's a demon. Like it's all there, the boogeyman's behind every corner. And when you are sitting in the era that we're sitting in, we were brought up in an era of post slasher renaissance of paranormal, where it was like a middle finger to the satanic panic, and bringing back in vogue the paranormal world and all of that sort of stuff. And so you had the 87 different shows. Everybody and their mother was a ghost hunter. Everybody and their mother had, it's like I talked about on a Gotten Yes spot that I did. And I promise this is all rounding out. But if back then when I was in college, if every single person who said that they had extraordinary abilities were the real McCoy, then we had the paranormal Power Rangers on our hands, dude. We had the supernatural Avengers. Like we, there was nothing that could have stood a chance. We were exorcising any demon. It was all like that. It was all going to fall if everybody was the real McCoy, you know what I mean? And all of that sort of stuff. But it was considered normal. It was considered cool to say that you had powers or that you had an experience or different things like that. And so during that time, I don't think we really understand, unless you're willing to wade through the waters of the very real psychological assessment of pop culture and its impact on humanity, is to say how much that changed the paradigm for us today in 2025, for us today. And maybe you could get deeper and say, you know, more than one thing can be true. And so all, you know, really the roots of even accepting something like this lie in our inherent spirit man, our inherent spirit woman, the inherent nature that we as humans, and I do fundamentally believe this, we are spiritual beings that inhabit a meat sack, that we exist in a carbon-based life form in the material world for a period of time, and then we are released from the meat sack and go on from there. And I could sit here and hypothesize that's for a theology lesson, and really we don't actually have nearly as much evidence to say definitively one way or the other than a lot of my contemporaries would like to make you believe, but that's an entirely other conversation. Maybe something for spiritual weirdness, I don't know. But to me, that's where more of this sits, because I think when we think about extraterrestrials, it sits in this weird spot, right? Because you can hand wave this stuff away and say, you know, they're watching, or they've been here, or they exist, and we just their technology is so much more advanced that we don't know, and all of this other stuff. You can say all of this stuff because it's more of a blank slate, because it's more of a there's a lot more room to be able to explain things or go into different topics and different things like that and go in and out of different things. Whereas the paranormal isn't that same way. And it sits in this world where you kind of have to explain a bit of the tangible material nature of it. Because if you're going to sit here and say, I saw glowing lights, well, who else saw them? Where did they go? What did this? What did that? And you can you have to ask and interrogate all of the questions. That is exactly why, if in these hour plus long segments that you all hear from me once a month ish allegedly, there it seems like, oh, I don't believe in aliens, but I think there's a ghost behind every corner. Neither one of those things are necessarily true, but one engages a lot more with high-level science than the other one does. You know what I mean? Like, I think it requires you to make room for those things, and thus the scrutiny is always going to be higher for aliens.
I never thought about it that way. And that's why I'm glad you're here. Because I think just having me here would be fairly boring. I would have just gone straight into the sightings and everything, and we'd be at the explanations right now of what that could have been. And that's not a criticism or anything like that. No, I really like hearing your perspective on this. I don't even know if I have anything to add to it.
So let's jump back into the story here for a second, right? So like we're talking 40s, right?
Right. Yes.
That's what we're talking. Let me look at the run sheet. Yep.
World War II.
Imagine this for a second, right? Let's give them grace here for a second and say, like, because we're here to talk about the weird and all this kind of stuff. So you gotta turn your brain for a second with all of our logical wirings and all of this sort of stuff. You gotta turn your brain for a second to the dial that says, okay, what if this happened? Okay, so what if this happened? Imagine this for a second. It's not just, you're not just some random pilot, right? You're not just flying an aircraft full of people that are going to, I don't know, on vacation or to go visit family or whatever like that. No, this is wartime. And you start to see unidentified objects. You start to see all of the, like, that had to have been wild. And that's where, like, these wartime things to me have a heightened sense of credibility to them for two reasons. One, with all of the asterisks in the world that we don't have time to go into, I do think energy is a thing. I do think that we put out energy with the things that we do. I think there's a reason why tension is palpable, why laughter is contagious, why sorrow is collective. I think all of these things are true for a reason. So to me, it immediately asks the question, did the widespread violence and despair and aggression weaken a barrier, attract something from another place? And if you're talking about all of these people who are mid-combat, you mean to tell me that's all corroborated? It's all like they all saw something that wasn't there, or all saw just in enemy crafts or something like that? Like, no. These people would have been well-versed in what they were seeing because they would have needed to know the enemy. Again, we're talking about wartime. They would have had to have known a friendly versus an enemy. So if they're sitting here saying it wasn't one of ours, to me, there's just a heightened level of, I guess, credibility to it than just some, I don't know, random farmer who saw a light fly by their farmland in the middle of Nebraska or in the middle of wherever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's actually been, to go to your first point, a super popular hypothesis is the idea of why do these things seem to be seen more often in times of distress, in times of war or just devastation. And that may very well may be something that the attraction one I see is the one that's more popular in that in various forms. It's like maybe they're documenting it, or maybe they're curious, or what capabilities do they have, whatever the we is or the things are, or right. Curiosity. Or it could just be like maybe there's even been the idea thrown around they feed off of it, whatever that, once again, the they is. And I get the idea behind it. And sometimes I'm even almost there myself to think that way. Because if you're looking at circumstances where UFO reports across the ages, conflict seems to be something that draws them out. Not every single case, obviously. But the question then becomes, okay, they are seeing it. These are men who are trained well to look for their guys and know about the other guys, even in the dead of night, so that they can identify as best as possible with limited vision. That's my guy. That's their guy. I want that guy dead. But then something else comes along the way that acts abnormally, that doesn't act as foe or friend. and then simply disappears and at the same time moves as fast as you and then faster than you and goes at angles that are impossible for the technology you have at your capabilities at this time. I, like you, lend more credence to sightings like this because they're putting a lot at stake by saying these words out loud. By saying these words out loud, they could easily be put in front of a review board and say, you're not a pilot anymore. Yep. Or here's your, you know, medical discharge or something like that. There's a cost that would come with this if they're going to stand by what they say. And what really lends credibility to it with me is that the people in charge took these very seriously to try and figure out what are they seeing. These things aren't showing up on radar. And it's definitely not German. It's definitely not Japanese. What is this thing?
Well, that's and you raise a good point, because for as much as we sit here and talk about, it's one thing for two dudes on the internet to be talking about it in the year of our Lord 2025. Whatever you think you're going to run into with people giving you a raised eyebrow, amplify that by, I don't know, 1,000-fold to start the conversation in the 40s. In the military during the war, yes. Flying fighter craft. Like they had everything to lose by sticking to a story. So take a second so that way so the folks listening can wrap their mind around the scale, because we've talked about this a couple of different times. We've made reference to it. What spread are we talking about from a world landscape of these sightings and all of that sort of stuff?
Is it like year wise?
Well, from like geographic location. So we had talked about this is not just happening in one specific space at one specific time. So I guess both. I guess geographic, okay. But also from a time frame perspective.
Yeah, I think you made me recall a memory. I think I said 42 in the opening. The earliest one I remember reading about was 41. And I think I want to say that was in Indonesia with the British pilots while they still were helping out with the Pacific front there before America got involved. But yeah, 41 to 45 are like the big times for all of this. And we'll get to a sighting later on that actually happened. Same guy, he alleges, in the 60s of a similar ball of light fire craft thing. So this is happening on the European theater and the Pacific theater, over Hungary, over France, Germany. I didn't look too much on the Soviet side of things, but I do remember there being at least one sighting in the Soviet Union somewhere. But then the entire Pacific theater alone, like, it's all over the place, the dots for what they see these things. This is worldwide.
Yeah. So, I think it's worth noting that there's continuity in what people are reporting having seen. And this is at a time where people aren't putting things out on the internet and all of that. And we're not like getting these long detailed, like, people who would otherwise have absolutely no connection to each other or been able to hear about these things are saying similar things. And to me, So track with me here, right? Cloaking technology. We have experimented in like look it up. This is not conspiracy theory. This is all documented. You can find it, that we have experimented with light-based cloaking technology. Now, the question becomes, what if whatever they saw either had perfected it or was at least more advanced to be able to have light-based cloaking technology to be able to cloak what they actually were? And thus, that's why you get burning balls of light. That's why you get like the way that people are seeing them, and that it was because they were cloaked that people saw what they saw.
Which is certainly something people have brought out too. And that's once again, assuming that these are technological in nature. There are other, we'll get to those later on, of potential biological and or supernatural entities. I'm not big on, but at least I want to throw them out there to give them their time under the sun.
Yeah.
But yeah, the idea of you can appear as one thing, your hologram technology or whatever, to, while you're actually cloaked, look like this instead.
Yeah, sure.
If you're advanced enough to do that, might as well.
So where does this come into contact with Roswell?
Well, it's going to depend on who you ask, number one. But the idea being is that, okay, during World War II, especially on the American side of things, we kept seeing these things, not knowing what the hell they were, not having any way of controlling them. You know, one thing America doesn't like is not being able to control something, is they spent time trying to find a way to maybe even shoot something down or figure out what they could do. And, or depending on your interpretation of the Roswell story, they just kind of lucked out and a craft had an explosion or something happened on a warp nacelle or whatever. And it just happened to crash land into America. I'm sure there's more than that, but I haven't gone too far to connect the dots there.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to go into the etymology of Foo Fighters.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So if you're wondering, Foo Fighters, well, yeah, it's not just a band. Well, like mentioned earlier, they take their name from this, and there's been debate over the years of what actually it means. The pilots I mentioned earlier are the ones where we actually get the coin termed for these entities, crafts, whatever. And the word foo itself is an intentional kind of nonsense word, you know, like omnipotence, for example, or France, you know, that was created in the 1930s by the cartoonist Bill Holman for a comic strip I had never heard of before, Smokey Stover. And the titular character called himself a foo fighter as part of his job of being an actual firefighter. And it's one of those things where it was intentionally made up, but he claims as well that he had seen the word written like a antique shop or something, of like a jade Chinese figurine that more than likely was transliterated incorrectly from what we would transliterate today, F-U to F-O-O, on the Chinese side of things. And that Chinese word fu can mean happiness or blessing. Now, for our, I just realized that typos, wrong four, our mythological friends out there, this is where we get the term foo dogs from, which you'll typically see more in Chinese mythology. But that's one of those things that kind of transcends cultural boundaries and were kind of appropriated in, I don't know, sorry, that word is charged. They were then brought into other mythologies. Of course, this is where we get the Shisa of Okinawa mythology, which is where we get King Shisa or King Caesar from Godzilla. So there you go.
There you go.
Now, another potential origin is it comes from the French word feu. I don't pretend to understand that illegitimate language of illegitimate people. It basically means fire. And they would then associated, the word would be associated with the fiery properties of the balls of light that they were going up against.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating. Like, I think there's a, I think there's a level of interest that you can take, and that I think is healthy to take, to see how different cultures wrap language around different experiences. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just find another analogy fun too. But also understanding, yep, why would they call them these things? Because, you know, like, where do you pull Foo Fighters out? And you learn it's from a comic strip, and he just kind of made up the word, and it just happens to mean something like this. It's just, I'm not one of those where I see connections in everything. You know, that's why I don't believe in ley lines and the like. But I think it's just fascinating at the end of the day. So the actual, oh, what was that?
Nothing. I'll let it go. I won't be realist entirely. And all that.
Okay. On your best behavior.
Yeah.
So, as regards to the crafts, balls of light, entities, whatever you want to call them, themselves, normally, in most typical cases, they were seen as just a ball of fire. Occasionally, someone would see something that almost suggested a metallic craft, like a plane, but like in a different shape. This is pre-flying saucers. That coin wouldn't be termed until 47. Normally, they would appear in red coloration, but there were also yellow, orange, and green variants that I saw. Maybe there were more, but as far as my research, I didn't see any more. And one of the things that were just big about them is that they could move as fast and then faster than any allied craft we had at the time. And this is like the top of the top, and they're pulling off maneuvers that are simply impossible with the G-forces involved to keep a pilot alive. That's assuming there's a pilot in there to begin with.
Right.
And they would continually get close to planes without actually like doing anything threatening. No weapons were discharged, if these even had weapons to begin with. And they just kind of maybe had a curiosity, maybe had a whatever. They were just looking at us, and then they'd go away without being seen. As we mentioned before, they were seen on all different types of theaters, Atlantic, Pacific. But on the Pacific side of things, there were more cases of what were more spherical objects that looked more metallic as compared to like the European side of the conflict.
I mean, that makes sense for the region that it's in, especially because, like, I mean, culturally, that's one aspect of it, but also like they would be more inclined to attribute it to something that more resembled their culture than the Europeans would. You know what I mean?
These are American and British pilots seeing them. The Japanese reports, I remember, I don't know if they went into detail on outside of balls of fire. I'd have to look that one up.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I just, to me, and I do think it's fascinating that there's a level of this that, like, you're sitting here telling me, oh yeah, no, that's a popular opinion that, like, friends, I'm not like, I'll tell you flat out how the sausage is made. On the months that I don't that I'm not running things, if I'm not that well versed in it, in all of that, I take the run sheet, I feed it into Skynet, and I have Skynet give me talking points and all of that. I have no problem admitting any of that. So these things that I'm saying, like, and then like that's just all based off of the run sheet. Then I pepper in my own stuff. So like, yes, any of these theories that I'm positing and all of that, they are my own. I did not know that these things were like popular and all of that sort of stuff. And so like, to me, again, I think sometimes when we talk about the paranormal, we overcomplicate it. I just think that it makes all of the sense in the world why some would see metallic and others would see balls of fire.
Yeah, that makes sense. And thank you for your honesty. Now, let's see. Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, the Allies weren't the only one experiencing these things. The Germans were doing it. The Italians saw them. The Soviets saw them. Well, Soviets are the Allies, but not really much of an ally, more of a frenemy. But the Japanese were also huge. Like, they were all like, what are these things? They keep showing up. They thought it was some type of advanced Allied weapon that they were just like using to showboat around with and make them feel like they should just give up. Or that they just didn't know like what this was. I do remember there being one report I read of some people reporting on seeing one of these, and they got heavily disciplined for like even mentioning it. I believe this was a German officer who made that, it's like, which not really out of character for what's going on there. So let's get into some of the sightings. This is not an exhaustive list. Joe and I don't have time for that. You're happy to get what I give you is what I'm going to say. So I think I picked out three or four. Then it should be in chronological order. Outside of one, two I don't know the exact dates of from my research. But the first one, this happens in northern France, December in the year 1942. So pilot officer Brian Lumsden, who was a New Zealander, and this time New Zealand was one of many British colonies. So he's essentially British for the sake of that, but this is his actual country of origin. Flying with his, I believe he was at the number 3 squadron's night flight. Claimed that he saw two amber-colored lights that followed him on an intruder mission. If you don't know what that is, even though I thought I knew, I was wrong, an intruder mission was the specified name for the thing that Allied planes would do when they infiltrated enemy territory at night and strike at planes while they're still out on the ground at bases instead of inside of primarily France. At the time of this initial bombing, the idea being if you go out at night, no one's looking for you. Maybe they might see you on radar, but they're not going to be able to scramble in time. They're not going to be able to see anything, but you know the general location of the base. So you can just spray and pray and get as many planes as possible on the ground destroyed. Now, which should tell you something about how he has been trained and what he is capable of doing at night. So he himself noted that one of the lights was higher than the other. And this was something that was kind of thrown as an accusation. Oh, you just misidentified the wing lights on an enemy aircraft or even one of your own. And judging from the distance of the lights and at the difference in those lights, they would have been too far apart from each other to have been on the same plane. And he claims that the lights themselves pursued him until he approached the English Channel. So maybe they respect government boundaries. Who knows? At that same time, another pilot who was flying with them saw a similar light the next night, but this one was one of the ones that projected a green light. So anything to say on that one, Joe?
No, I'm good so far.
Okay. All right. This is where I butcher an entire city name, so God help me. In Székesfehérvár, Hungary, this takes place on the October 13th, 1944. A British crew that was organizing a similar strike recorded seeing lights following their planes. And Pilot Officer Taylor, one of the men there, reported he was followed by a red light that would kind of appear and then suddenly disappear for several minutes at a time. And this was also not their first report of this happening, as they had seen Foo Fighters as early as April 1944, and they would continue seeing them until the end of the war in 45. Next up, we have the South Pacific, and I'm almost certain this happens in 1945. I wasn't able to narrow it down completely, but this alleged sighting comes from Duane Adams, an American Air Force pilot, and he saw Foo Fighters twice in separate years. And he described them as a bright light that followed his aircraft for about a half an hour before they just quickly just disappeared into the sky, just suddenly went up and they're out of the way. Now, both the times, and we only went over one, but we'll get to the second one in a bit, he saw them at night, and they were also witnessed by the air crew that he was affiliated with at the time. Now, the second one does not take place during the war. He claims to have seen another Foo Fighter, but in the 1960s, when very few people were reporting stuff like this, and he was piloting a different aircraft at the time. So take that as you will. Now, here's one I found especially interesting, and it's the final one I have. A future senator of Alaska, Ted Stevens, as he was serving in the war, would later tell they were both senators at the time, Harry Reid, about his encounter with a Foo Fighter, saying, "I was flying, and there was an object next to me. I couldn't get rid of it. I slowed up. It was there. I sped up. It was there. I would dive. It would be there. I called. Nothing on radar." And if I'm remembering correctly, this is actually part of, I believe Senator Reid was behind some of the disclosure attempts in Congress, House of Representatives. Can't remember exactly which one off the top of my head, the information the U.S. government had on UFOs. And this was something that was brought up in the midst of that. All right. So we've talked about it. We're trying to figure it out. Let's go into some potential explanations for what the heck these things are. And of course, the ever popular, the History Channel answer, number one, outside of aliens, Nazi experiments. Because one other thing the History Channel was known by during those daytime hours was the Hitler Channel. So obviously he had his hands in everything, and he's got a secret base in Antarctica, bringing these flying saucers into the world, these Foo Fighters. Joe, what do you think? Nazi experiment.
No, I think a lot was made, has been made over just what the Nazis experimented with. And with the wide range of experiences that, yes, have continuity to them, but are ranging in years, ranging in area, all of that sort of stuff, I cannot get behind this one, because it just feels like we're just trying to hand wave away all of this by saying, oh, but it's just the Nazis.
I'm right there with you. Now, if you want to talk about pretty much every government involved with in this war was trying to create the next best thing. We're trying to have the better technology than those who they were fighting against. So if you're not doing that in the war, you're going to be in a sad state, because the other guy's doing it and you're not. And America was testing out things that never really got off the ground. Germany was doing it. Britain was doing it. Soviets were doing it. Japan was doing it. Because that's smart in war. You want to have the leg up on your enemy. You want to be better than them. So the idea, maybe someone even had an idea like this, sure. But to actually bring it into practice at this time with the science available as they understood it, we can't even do this now. So the idea that some German yokel scientist or top of their field, I'm just making a joke. Same thing with the Allies, who would be the next one to bring up here. And they could do it then, but not now. Is this some Dr. Erskine moment where he's been shot by a Nazi agent and we don't have the super soldier serum anymore? I highly doubt it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm right there. I'm right there. For as much as I value the level of continuity, I mean, you heard the wide range of people and the connective tissue. When Christian went through the examples that he did, that it just feels like there's too much tissue to be able to then turn around and say, oh no, all of it's just, you know, it was just experimentation during the war, like almost 100 years ago. And we just don't have the capability of doing that anymore. You know what I mean?
And that's also a huge logic thing. If you had something like this at your disposal, why are you just looking at the other enemy aircraft? Why aren't you shooting them down on either side of the equation?
Whoever controls this, if they meant to win the war for their people group, whoever controls this wins. Like, there's no bigger trump card that is taking place in any of this, because you're talking about crippling another military group before they can even before they can do anything. You know what I mean? Because all of these have the same story, that they were these things were faster than whatever they were flying. So it's gonna it's an open and shut case.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing too. If you could do this and intimidate them, maybe that was your intention. Intimidate and say, hey, we got real close to you. We could have destroyed all of you. Sure. I mean, there's a legitimate strategy behind that, but you would also announce that you were capable of doing this. And once again, these are things that we are incapable of doing now because what would happen to you is you would liquefy, essentially, if you moved like this through the air at these speeds, at these angles. We can't do this with the technology we have available to us. So the idea that's that someone back then could? No.
Right. That's part of why we don't have time travel in the most classical sense, is because it literally rips the body apart at a subatomic level. Mm-hmm. Like, the matter cannot stay in a solid state in with what we currently know about science. And so the idea that this exists and is man-made, you cannot convince me that then it just stays a secret.
Yeah. I think we're both in the camp. No way, Jose. So next up, we have, of course, demons/angels. Now, these are legitimate hypotheses thrown out there, so let me give them their time in the sun. You can probably guess where I'm going from the way I worded that. The idea being, of course, is that there is a certain subsection of the UFO community that has gone into the belief of two different camps. There's a civil war going on of whether UFOs are not actual crafts from outer space and are not actually aliens within them. They're actually either demons or angels. And the idea being, on the demonic side of things, let's see if I can do this justice, is that they are there to get people to not think about spiritual matters in the sense of, let me word this correctly, by having people worried about this potential technology, they're not thinking about God. They're thinking about, let's improve this science instead. So their minds are wandering from spiritual truth elsewhere. And that would be the idea of demons acting as some sort of liars, as you know, demons are wont to do, to get people away from the truth. That's the demon side of things. Now, the angel side of things is a more positive mix, less cynical, and more in the sense of they were just showing themselves temporarily to let the Allied soldiers know, hey, you're on the side of right. You're on the side of God doing the right thing. We're just here. We're actually flying with you, and we're protecting you in ways that, excuse me, sorry, I can't keep a straight face. We're protecting you in ways to show that we're doing things you can't. So if we're doing things you can't, God can do things that you can't. So put trust and faith in him. So Joe, your thoughts on either equation here?
That sounds like folks that that really want to believe that they're on the right side of history. None of it. Exactly not that. So there's this thing that takes place, right? When you're ghost hunting and you get evidence. The old adage goes, is if you need to spend more than 10 seconds with it, it's fake. It's not, you just haven't found the explanation, but it's not real. If you need to magnify and tip this computer screen and look at it and squint and all of these sorts of things, and you have to go through and explain yourself over a series of steps to try and make the math, then you are doing gymnastics. Like you really want to spiritualize it, but that's just trying to shove a square peg into a round hole and make something where there's not something. And I'm not saying it's not anything. I'm just saying when it comes to that specific explanation, that no, I cannot in any way, shape, or form get behind that.
Now, to be fair for a second, do I think demons and or angels have the ability to do something like this?
Sure.
I can't really quantify their abilities, but I think that's a little bit of a cop-out too, to a certain extent. But I don't see why they would waste their time doing this, when there are so much more subtle ways of getting people to not look at truth or to lead people to truth that I think is more the status quo.
So I will
this is me like pulling a friggin' hamstring to try and be to try and stretch enough to give grace here. So like, understand that if you are in this camp and you happen to be listening to this and whatever, understand I'm trying. You have to go outside of the Bible to make at minimum, you have to say, well, I can't describe every single thing that an angel or a demon can do in order to make that math. That's like bare minimum. Like that's without like concocting anything else. That's not without like putting something together and saying, oh, this is precedent for that. On the angelic side, you can't hand wave away the Old Testament. And so there are certain aspects of the Old Testament that you have to be able to do something with. And so that side of it, okay. But again, you can't hand wave away the Old Testament. And there were other situations that if what we're doing is playing a game of drawing precedence and all of that sort of stuff, angels have very exactly said, no, I am not involved in the human conflict. I am not on your side. I am on God's side. Yes. So like we gotta take the whole thing. If we're going to play gymnastics here, then you got to play by the rules. You don't get to pick and choose. If this is where you want to hang out, okay, cool. Then hang out here. Do it. Like I said, you know, again, shout out to my seminary life. The closing remarks that I gave in that is, dude, whatever you believe, say it with your whole chest. Like, stand by it. Like, have the guts to stand by what it is that you believe. So if you're hanging out in this part of town, then say it with your whole chest. But I would like a word. Like, if we're gonna play in this playground, then you've got to be able to square all of the pegs without taking the cop out and saying, oh, I'm just going to look at this whole thing and say, I don't know, greater designs than they have, than I have. You know what I mean? My human brain can't wrap its mind around all of this. Then like, who shuts that box? Who closes Pandora's box at that point? Where does that slippery slope end? You know what I mean? Because then you can say whatever the hell you please. You can say whatever you want and be like, oh, it's precedent because we don't know, because we just don't know what demons can do. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not saying you're saying this. I'm saying that like that's the logic leap to me. That to me is the area where there is not even a theoretical precedent to suggest that these things can be are even possible.
Given the feats that we've seen within scripture, I find it incredibly hard to believe. And yeah, I don't think it is actually what is happening. Possible, maybe, given a very expanded list of what could be versus what we actually could say for sure. We have seen an angel do this. We have seen a demon do that. Sure. But
yeah,
I don't drive with this.
That's about the one step in that direction that I could follow you on and say like, okay, do we know everything? No. Can I shut the door and say absolutely impossible? No. I can't. So, okay. If that's me giving a little bit of merit, then that's me giving a little bit of merit. But again, a million questions, a million other things need to pop up. And I'm going to go out of the soapbox here for a second. I don't think we need to jump to demons and angels and all of that sort of stuff. We don't need to clutch our pearls as Christians and say, oh, it can only be these two things because anything else, admitting to anything else is blasphemous. Read your Bible. Like I'm saying, read your Bible. You don't need to go outside of the realm of from Genesis to Revelation to have huge suggestions that there is a pantheon of spiritual forces that exists And the Bible can still be accurate because at the end of the day, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So what are you saying? That that's all just a matter of like, oh, King of Kings, what, in relation to men? But like, I just, to me, that's doing more gymnastic work. And I just think it's closed-minded. I just think it's willful arrogance to say that it can only be one or the other. And it's hiding. It's hiding from deeper truths. Because again, I've said this before on the show, and I'll say it again. Y'all, I understand that when we talk about this, this is coming from a Christian perspective. But we sit in a context of a network where there's freedom. I'll say there's freedom. And so things get said that are not from a classical Christian perspective.
You are so very charitable tonight.
Yeah, I'm damn near broke my back on that one. So I say all that to say that you may be listening to this and not be coming from the Christian POV. Okay. If you're not coming from the Christian POV, then none of what I'm about to say pertains to you. And so hang out for a second, because we're going to get back to the spooky nonsense here in a second. But when we look at the spiritual from the Christian perspective, the Bible never says, don't believe this because it's, or don't do this because it's fake. I just had a conversation with my wife about tarot last night. It came up in the topic of something else, and we were talking about tarot, and I'm like, I've classified that in the same category that I classify a lot of this stuff. And I've seen enough stuff to know that, dude, there's some weird stuff that goes on out there. There just is. And when you look at something like this, I just think that Christians are so good at being closed-minded and not understanding the larger context in which we sit. Because here's the thing. Literally, we start the conversation. If you are a Christian, you worship a dude who came back from the dead. That's like that. Like, we can make zombie jokes if you want to make zombie jokes, but we worship a dude who came back from the dead. Like, that's
the thing. Like a bare minimum requirement.
Yeah. Like before you get into the wide array, like the why, I'll leave it at wide array of theological differences that exist within this network, you start that conversation at dude came back from the dead. Why then take the hard turn at Albuquerque and get so closed off to any of this as to say it only has to be in Xbox or Y box? That's it. It can only be A or B. That's it. There's no other nuance to it, because what? That is the thing that disrespects God? Come on, man. Like, and this is coming from somebody that, for all of my liberalism, for all of the nonsense that I get along with and all of that sort of stuff, I like to fancy myself closer to classically Christian than some other stuff that you might hear. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I'm wiling out by this. I just am not so close-minded that the only thing that I say, I read the whole of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation and say, oh, it can only be angels and demons. I can't rock with you on that one, man, because I don't see that. I think you got to willfully ignore huge portions of scripture. And don't get me wrong, theologically, that happens on the right. That happens on a daily basis. I stop keeping count on how often I see major things that are just like, ah, don't worry about that. Because this other thing just makes more sense to me. Well, friends, just because it makes sense to you, and just because you were raised thinking this way, doesn't make it right. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? Like, I just think that there's so many more crayons in the box that we should not be limiting ourselves to the degree that we are when we do this. And I say all that to say that because, again, a largely Christian perspective, this is going to be the go-to a lot, unless you end up in this camp of you think it's an alien or you think it's an extra dimensional being or something along those lines. If you hear the words classically Christian, there's a huge assumption that you are saying, oh, so then the only thing that you believe in is angels or demons. And like, I just don't see it. I cannot wrap my mind around being that close-minded.
I will say, Joe, for all the restraint you've shown tonight, I think I can safely say that there's an extra jewel on one of your five crowns in heaven. Because that was incredibly nice and sanitized. And I appreciate it.
Sanitized is the word of the day. Anyway.
But here's where the fellowship ends, because we're on our next potential. And that is, of course, extraterrestrial visitors. The idea, of course, being that these craft with unknown qualities, unknown points of origin, have cross the distances of space to come to Earth and investigate, explore, cause problems to the people that they encounter. And whether they have some form of cloaking, like we mentioned earlier, or this is what they actually look like, huge debate. As you may notice, if you look at your ufological history, the appearances of UFOs change over time in various forms. Now, whether that's like a technological difference from these alien races, sure, you could throw that in there, or that human interpretation or hoaxes or lies, that is its own thing. Now, the idea of this hypothesis being, once again, that extraterrestrial life has come here, they're in the middle, they're watching a conflict on Earth, they're curious, they come down, they see, are these people friendly towards us? Are they going to try and shoot us? Maybe. That's, once again, putting motivations on a figure you can't even see, which is a huge ask, I know. But this is a little more where I align. And Joe and I were talking a little off air before we started. So I'm interested to hear where he has to go with this topic of discussion.
So I classify this in the same spot that I classify a lot of it. And actually, you said it when it came to the technological thing. If this was a thing, if this is the explanation, then why haven't we seen it since? If this is it and things came here, why haven't they been back? There's been other conflicts. Why aren't there more? You mean to tell me there's so few that they only came during these very specific times, 80 years ago, and that's it? And every single solitary time, every friggin' time, it was cloak and dagger. They didn't make a public display of themselves. If you're talking about the level of technological advancement, what are you hiding from? What are you scared of? Because at that point in time, if all of it's on the up and up, if we're just keeping it 100 straight across the board, that these things are advanced technological things from an advanced race that is not of this earth, and that's the explanation that we're going for, What in the wide world of sports do you have to be afraid of? You can come through and not think twice about it. That is an open and shut case, and we are caught with our cosmic pants around our ankles, and we got nothing to say for it. Because you're talking about the creme de la creme on the world stage, and it's getting bested every single time. And it's not a second thought. So if that's the answer, then why in the wide world of sports have they not been back? And I say that about ufology straight across the board. When it comes to, and hear me, because we're going to get here, and it's the worst kept secret we're building to, but like when we're talking about extraterrestrial from this plane of existence, that's where I hit the hard stop. I tend to agree with, and I'm not even the person, look, I think there are so many theological things that we do not understand, that there's creation. Like I don't, if I'm open enough to say that I don't think Adam and Eve were the first humans to ever walk the earth, the world is your oyster as far as what the hell else that can mean. What else goes on outside of the paradigm of the human race? So I'm not even approaching this from a theological standpoint. This does not conflict with my theology in any way, shape, or form. As it currently sits, you'd have to get into some specifics. I'm saying at a concept. I'm saying at a conceptual level. It does not by default enter into the conversation and immediately break theology, in my opinion. I think there are plenty of people who have posited extraterrestrial stuff that I'm like, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. But like, to me, it tests and strains the limits of I lost oh okay
yeah, there back. You are
yes you can hear
you're
me
back.
Okay, cool. All right, It strains the limits for me. Like this is where you need to start squinting and cocking your head in order to make it all make sense. You know what I mean? Like that to me, like saying it that's from outer space is where it's like, okay, then if they can, then why haven't they? And if there's one, how isn't there dozens? You know what I mean? And where are they from? Are you saying that it's only a small handful, and that's why? Like, you need more caveats to it than you do other forms of explanation to me.
Yeah, and there have been caveats provided, and of course, there's reason to argue against all of them. There's the idea that these are just scout ships, and there were no actual human pilots involved, or alien pilots, as it were. And their job was to assess like the technological nature, and however long it takes to advance through space, they may have figured out, oh, well, we can take them. And then probably tomorrow or whenever, 100 years from now, then they actually arrive with their space fleet and invade. That's an idea people have posited. Let's see, as well, there's the idea that maybe they have some form of non-interference prime directive where like they can show up and look, but they can't like actually talk. Once again, you're asking a lot for something like that, which is a possibility, don't get me wrong. But without knowing intention, all we have is speculation. And there's the other one is they're just curious, but not enough to talk. Or maybe they can't communicate, and that's part of why they're here, is figuring out. Also, there's the idea is these aren't all the same race encountering Earth. And that's why the technologies are different. That's why the appearances of ships are different. The reactions are different. Who knows is my answer. I know that no answer presented today is going to be good enough, and I hate that. So for the sake, this is mine.
So I want to needle your your statement there. Will any theory answer every single question? No. And if that's what you mean by good enough, okay. But I think there's a different explanation that you need less gymnastics to be able to do. I think that there is one that I would classify as being good enough in the same way that many within the ufology world would say that them being extraterrestrials is good enough. Accepting that even though it is good enough, it does not answer every single question.
Yes. Well, go ahead, because we've been talked about this before, so I'm interested to hear what you have to say now.
So I have, since I was a kid, been fascinated by the idea of quantum mechanics, of a different planes of existence, different timelines, the idea that there are different things overlaid over top of our tangible world. Part of that is because growing up, having had, and I do think it's funny that this comes up, having ribbed this group of people earlier on in the episode, having had paranormal experiences, I understood that there was something outside of myself, that there was something more to this life. That kind of segued into a time as a transhumanist, the idea being that you do things to prolong the human experience and all of that. Most classically, it is you will find technological transhumanists, where the key to immortality is found within the integration of man and machine.
Mm-hmm.
For me, when we look at the idea of the universe and the rules that it plays by, there, I cannot help but see, while yes, I'm not going to sit here and start ripping apart laws of nature, but it still only describes this in the grand scheme. And for those that are listening to this in podcast form, it describes very little when it comes to the grand scheme of everything. And so when you start to look at the idea of matter, matter vibrates at a very specific frequency. Matter is always active. And the theory is that energy coupled with large impacts can generate weakened states in the dimensional layer. So the idea being that there are dimensions outside of our own, and that if we are experiencing something, it's not that it's coming from outer space, it's that it's coming from another dimension. And I just, when I look at the grand scheme of all of the theories, the least heavy lifting sits in this camp, where you already have theoretical physics backing a lot of what's being said here. And you don't need to make the level of excuses that you do for the other forms of this conversation when talking about, okay, so if the impact layer was that of a world war, then, you know what I mean? Like, again, good enough. It doesn't square every single circle. It doesn't answer every question. None of these will. But to me, it just, that's what makes the most sense.
Yeah.
And I know some of you are listening to this and gonna say a lot of the same, like you're gonna have a field day in a lot of the same way that I have a field day whenever extraterrestrials come up. You know what I mean? Like, that's just the reality of it. You were inclined to believe the things that we're inclined to believe.
Yeah. And that's another reason why I'm glad you're here, because I never in a thousand years would have, I mean, outside of, yeah, extra dimensional is kind of part of the bag on this side of things, but I wouldn't have gone the in-depth focus that you had, and because that side of science isn't my shtick. It's not my thing, because when you go on the more quantum mechanics, physics side of things, my brain starts to shut off. For whatever reason, I'm just deficient there. So to have someone who studied it far more and can explain it better, I am all for that. Yeah, we're going to take opposing views on this, but at the end of the day, say, nah, that's the best I got. And I think it's a lot better than our last option, which is, of course, good old human error / weakness / misidentifications. Every skeptic's favorite thing to throw out on fantastical things, which I shouldn't be saying that as tongue-in-cheek, because yes, this does happen. But for every single person involved in this to misidentify something when they are highly trained, highly competent, they have other people seeing the exact same thing that they are, my credulity starts to die a little bit on the idea of this being truth.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Possible in spurts, in isolated situations.
Yeah.
This is where the explanations tends to sit of extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Garbage. That's lazy. Anybody who says that, you're being lazy. I'm sorry, you're being lazy. Like, that is an attempt to try to discredit whatever it is that you don't want to believe in. Like, that's just that. It's just that simple. Like, I just don't think when you're talking about the scientific method that it's credible science to turn around and say, oh, because I find this hard to believe, because I find this to be extraordinary, then I require extraordinary evidence. Because if you say extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, what about the person who doesn't find it to be extraordinary? What about the person that thinks that it's the most logical explanation? You know what I mean? Like, it just, to me, leaves so much on the table to just chalk it up. Like, so that's the lowest hanging fruit. Like, at least if you're going to be skeptical, again, say it with your whole chest. It's not that I'm bagging on the skeptical community, but come harder. Like, try harder. Like, if you really are going to come out here and say, oh, none of this is real, okay, then do the heavy lifting enough to say, this is why it's not real.
Yes. Because you can just say whatever you want and then just, okay, now I'm done with the conversation. It's the swamp gas idea. Yeah, sure. I can almost guarantee there have been some misidentifications over the years of, you know, just not even UFOs, of will-o'-the-wisp, what have you, of someone seeing swamp gas and going, yeah, that's something extraordinary, when it's actually something we can naturally explain. In the same way that people have misidentified planets as UFOs. Like, it's something that can happen. I'm not going to say that the skeptic has no right to say anything. I'm saying, like, if you're going to say something, back it up, like what you've said.
Yep. All right.
So, Joe and I as is often the case, are on opposite corners, but closely aligned in certain ways. I'm extraterrestrial. He's on extra-dimensional beings slash energy or higher concepts. My brain's too dumb to understand, but I'm glad he's here for. So that's what we think. Guys, is there something we didn't throw in there that you thought was a little better? Do you think that maybe we should have focused on this instead? Let us know in the comments down below. Are Foo Fighters real? If so, what are they? Are they Nazi experimental weapons? Are they aliens from another, beyond the stars? Misidentifications or something else? You know, we didn't touch everything that history and folklore have on the subject tonight. So let us know in the comments below if there's something else you'd like to do a follow-up on. Now, next week, excuse me, not next week. Gosh, I can't do that to us. Next month, we will be back, hopefully, to do our own picks. We did 6 months of letting you guys pick. It's now our turn. And Joe has decided he wants to take the forefront here. We're going to be doing cryptozoology. And we've already had an argument on whether or not this qualifies. Joe, tell us, what the good people, what we're doing.
So we are going to be covering next month the Kentucky Goblins. There are some that would put it in cryptozoology. There are others that would put it into ufology. There are even some that may put it into religious weirdness. So this is one that is surprisingly deeper than I realized it was getting into it, because the Appalachian part of the United States is weird. There's a lot of weird stuff that takes place out that way, and so that'll be next month.
All right, well, thank you, Joe, for tonight. Thank you guys for watching, listening, whatever you do, we really appreciate it. So next time, see ya.